This episode is sponsored by Celestron, manufacturer of high-quality telescopes and an industry leader in developing exciting optical products with revolutionary technologies.
I'm Kelly Beattie of Sky and Telescope magazine, and tonight we're going on a tour of the stars and planets that you'll see overhead during February. First, we'll take stock of the moon's whereabouts, spot three planets before dawn and two more after sunset, trace out the winter hexagon, and explore some lesser-known constellations. So grab your curiosity and come along on this month's Sky Tour. As each month begins, I like to imagine what the moon will look like over the next few weeks and where it'll be in the sky. Usually, I make a mental note of the month's first major lunar phase, and in this case, its first quarter on February 2nd. The moon looks like a half circle in the sky, a straight line marking sunrise across the lunar landscape and the rounded edge pointing the way toward the sun. Yes, it is the case that we're seeing just one quarter of the moon's total surface, front and back. But first quarter actually refers to the fact that the moon has traveled 25% of the way around its orbit since the most recent new moon. Anyway, first quarter is followed by full moon on the night of February 8th here in North America. Native Americans in the Northeast U.S. knew it as the full snow moon for obvious reasons. Third or last quarter falls on February 15th, followed by new moon on the 23rd. Later this month, the lunar crescent wanes or gets thin as it glides across the pre-dawn sky, which offers some worthwhile rewards if you can get yourself outside before the sun rises. Truth is, there's lots of action in the sky before sunrise, which for most of us northerners doesn't come until about 7 a.m. early in February. If you're up early enough and it's still dark, you'll notice something strangely familiar about the stars arrayed overhead. Look toward south, and you'll recognize the distinctive arc of Scorpius. Well up in the east are Vega, Deneb, and Altair, corners of the summer triangle. These are indeed the stars of summer, so what's going on? Well, several months from now, Earth will have curved about halfway around its orbit, and that seasonal motion will cause a big westward shift of these stars and constellations, from the morning sky into the evening sky. Conversely, stars we're now seeing after sunset will have swung around into the pre-dawn sky. Everything flips around. Now, I didn't drag you out so early for a geometry lesson. Nope, it's to point out three gleaming planetary beacons to you. Easiest to spot is brilliant Jupiter, over in the southeast. Look to its lower left, closer to the horizon by about the width of your clenched fist at arm's length, to spot Saturn. And to Jupiter's upper right is Mars. Throughout February, Jupiter and Saturn will gradually march higher before dawn, getting a little closer to Mars each week. Don't confuse Mars with the star Antares, which is two or three fists farther to the right, toward west. Antares loosely translates as rival of Mars, and the way they look now makes that obvious. Both are about the same apparent brightness, even though Antares is more than 2 million times farther away. It's a red supergiant star that outshines the Sun by more than 10,000 times. You'll notice that Jupiter, Saturn, and Mars are all rather low in the sky. That's because Earth's North Pole is tipped away from them. But if you're listening to this from Australia, Africa, or South America, you're in the hemisphere of Earth tipped toward these planets, and for you, they'll appear much higher up. Get up early on the morning of February 18th. It's a Tuesday, and you'll be rewarded with a view of Mars and a delicate crescent moon perched right beside it. In fact, if you live west of the Mississippi River, you can actually watch the moon cover Mars, what astronomers call an occultation. Use binoculars or a telescope to watch if you can. One day later, the moon is farther east and close to Jupiter. Let's turn our attention to the evening sky, where two more planets await you. Most obvious is Venus, shining so brightly over in the southwest that you just might be able to spot it even before sunset. Venus will be around all month, and then some, setting more than 3 hours after the sun. Now, Venus holds the key to spotting the fifth planet in view this month, Mercury. You'll need a clear view toward west, with no trees or buildings blocking the horizon. Start looking in the first days of February, about 30 minutes after sunset. Mercury is to the lower right of Venus by about 2 or 2.5 fists. It'll be easiest to spot in the twilight around February 9th or 10th. After that, it starts fading and dropping back down toward the horizon. Now, if you miss spotting Mercury this month, don't worry. You'll get another good chance after sunset in late May and early June. February is often the coldest month of the year for northerners, but the sun is telling a different story. The December solstice came and went weeks ago, and you can already notice that the days are getting longer, with earlier sunrises and later sunsets. The celestial geometry is changing too, as the sun is starting to slide farther north in the sky. In fact, during February, the sun races northward among the stars by about 1 degree every 3 days. Heck, in no time at all, we'll be on the threshold of spring. But the stars of winter are still firmly in control of the nighttime firmament. Let's track a few of them down. Note where the sun sets, and once twilight starts to envelop you, wheel around to the left until you're looking in nearly the opposite direction. The night sky's most dazzling star is Sirius, down near the southeastern horizon. Also known as the Dog Star, Sirius appears so bright partly because it is bright, outshining the sun by 25 times, and partly because it's relatively close by, only 8.5 light-years away. Above Sirius is the distinctive pattern of Orion the Hunter, the quintessential constellation of winter, or of summer, I suppose, if you live in Australia. Orion is unmistakable, even if you suffer from lots of light pollution. Its 3 stars in a tight diagonal row mark his belt, surrounded by a tall, boxy quartet of bright stars that frame his torso. To the belt's upper left is the red supergiant star Betelgeuse, which marks Orion's left shoulder. Now, you'd never guess it, because it's 428 light-years away, but Betelgeuse is one of the biggest stars known. If you swapped it for our sun, its surface would be somewhere between Mars and Jupiter, and Earth digested into star stuff. Betelgeuse varies in brightness over time, but it's having a real identity crisis. It's only 1/3 as bright right now as it was 6 months ago, for reasons that astronomers don't completely understand. To the upper right of Betelgeuse, by about 2 fists, is another red giant star. That's Aldebaran, the angry eye of the bull Taurus. Look closely. As with Antares in the morning sky, both of these beacons have a reddish tinge that sets them apart, subtly, from the stars around them. As you look around this part of the sky, you'll notice a bunch of bright stars. Skygazers often trace out an enormous 6-sided pattern they call the winter hexagon to connect them. To find it, imagine that Betelgeuse is in the middle of this hexagon. To its lower right, on the other side of Orion's belt, is icy white Rigel, marking the hunter's foot. From there, slide your gaze to the lower left by 3 fists until you reach Sirius. Continue clockwise around the hexagon, heading upper left by 3 fists to reach the star Procyon. Now glide to the upper left until you reach Pollux, and above it, Castor. These are the twins of Gemini. Continue to the upper right of the twins, almost overhead, to find Capella. From there, it's a 3-fist hop down to Aldebaran, and another 3-fist hop brings you back to Rigel. There you have it, the winter hexagon. Rigel, Sirius, Procyon, Pollux, Capella, and Aldebaran, with faint-hearted Betelgeuse anchoring its middle. Like Sirius, most of these sparklers are relatively close by, though some of the bright stars of Orion are relatively far away, 800 light-years or more. They're all in this part of the sky because we're looking along the disk of the Milky Way, outward rather than toward its center, and the stars are just more numerous and generally closer to us in that direction. For a little contrast, shift your gaze to the right of Orion. Even if you don't have a lot of light pollution, you'll notice that there's not much there. This wide expanse of sky, stretching all the way over to the Great Square of Pegasus in the west, is occupied by 3 big but dim constellations that all involve water. The first, nearest Orion, is Eridanus, representing an ancient mythical river. It begins at the foot of Orion, near Rigel, and meanders sideways and downward for quite a distance. Its brightest star, Achernar, is well below the horizon for us northerners. To the river's right is Cetus, an ancient sea monster who attacked Princess Andromeda as she lay chained to a rock. The brightest star in Cetus is Diphta, glowing low in the southwest right now. The third constellation is one you probably know, at least by name, and that's Pisces. These celestial fish are fashioned from a string of faint stars in a big V shape lying on its right side that parallels the left half of the great square. You might be able to make out a pentagon of faint stars below the square, known as the circlet, that marks the eastern end of Pisces. Why so many water constellations down in the southern sky? Apparently, this stems from ancient Mesopotamians and their sacred water god Enki, who inhabited the southern part of the sky. That's about it for this month. If you want more tips for viewing the night sky, including a free interactive star chart for any time or date, check out our website, skyandtelescope.com. If you haven't already subscribed, you can find Sky Tour on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you listen. And please leave a rating or review. It'll help others to find the show. And if you want to explore the solar system and universe more deeply, please do check out the full line of binoculars and telescopes available at Celestron.com. Sky Tour is a production of Sky and Telescope, a division of the American Astronomical Society, and is produced by me, Kelly Beatty. Next month, I'll introduce you to twin brothers who've really made a name for themselves in the sky. Until then, I wish you clear skies.